Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today I'm recording this from the site of the annual Summer Camp for Business Moguls, the Allen & Company Conference in Sun Valley, Idaho. My guest today is Stacy Bendett-Eisner. Stacy is a star CEO in the fashion world as the force behind the Alice and Olivia brand that has grown so rapidly over the past two decades. As of last year, she's also a tech entrepreneur as the founder of Creatively, a professional online network designed to help connect freelancers in creative industries with employers. And Stacy and her husband, Eric Eisner, have been regulars at the Allen & Company gathering for years. With her love of bold colors and prints, she cuts quite a colorful figure here. But she also fits right in with the group of prominent CEOs that includes her father-in-law, former Walt Disney co-chief Michael Eisner. As the titans of industry gathered, Bendett-Eisner took a moment to sit down with me at Java on 4th, a coffee shop down the road from the conference, to talk about the heady environment in Sun Valley and her ambitious business goals. It's all coming up right after this break. Stacy Bendett-Eisner, CEO and creative director of the retail brand Alice and Olivia, and also the founder of Creatively, a very interesting new networking platform specifically for people in the creative industries, which we'll talk a lot about what's going on with Creatively in a little bit. But I wanted to start, because we are in beautiful, booming downtown Ketchum, Idaho, right down the road from the site of the Allen & Company annual business conference for business moguls, tech titans, captains of industry and politics. This is an annual event that brings a lot of influential people together for a retreat to talk about business, to talk about heady things going on in the world. And Stacy, you have been attending this for a number of years.
Yes.
What, in your perspective, is the value? What do you see as the value of getting all of these minds together in kind of close quarters, beautiful, the Sawtooth Mountain setting? What do you see? What is the kinetic energy that comes in that from this grouping?
Well, I've actually been coming here for 14 years. My first year here, I was pregnant with my daughter, Eloise, which is so crazy to think about right now. Or 13 years, because she's turning 13. And I think that, you know, you bring all of these moguls who work so hard, who are so intense, together in a setting that's all about family. It's almost like adult camp. And it kind of relaxes everyone, but it also brings all of these amazing minds together. And I think just great ideas sort of, you know, grow here. I think when you never know who you're gonna run into, you never know who you're gonna meet. And you also end up having these really wonderful friendships that have been created during this week here every single year. I mean, there's so many people that when I walk in, I'm just, you know, it's like this warmth, like it feels like family and you're so excited to see. But I think that it's sort of this very organic way to network. And I think so many sort of partnerships and investments, and, you know, you hear about the big deals being made here, like the time my, you know, father-in-law made the deal between, ABC and ESPN and Disney, and you hear things like that, but there are so many smaller things that happen, both in the world of philanthropy, both in, you know, just ideas. Like, I remember one year, like, Mark Zuckerberg met Cory Booker and decided to donate $100 million to, like, schools in Newark. Like, those kind of things really happen here, and I think that's what's so beautiful about what the Allen Company has created.
It's interesting because, of course, we're coming off a year when, in 2020, like many other things, the Allen & Company conference couldn't happen. So you had a year where you didn't have that mingling, that the random factor of running into somebody around a corner in the beautiful Alpine Village setting of the Sun Valley Lodge. Did you feel the loss last year? Did you miss it when July 5th rolled around? It's always the weekend after July 4th.
I mean, I think last year was so disrupted, and there was something, I think, for like the creative side of my brain where I was kind of just happy working and like not having any socialization for a little bit. I got kind of used to that. And I think I was just so focused between Alice and Olivia and creatively that I wasn't really thinking about the things I was missing all year. I was thinking more of the things I had to like fix and get done. You know, for anyone in the retail world, last year was disruptive and really tough, and you had to, you know, work on every front to make it through. I sort of feel like a fashion survivor this year. But yeah, there was, I think coming here this year, there's this nostalgia and warmth and sort of excitement, almost like it's like back to camp or back to school, you know, the first day of school, where you're just sort of excited to kind of run into friends and socialize again. You know, obviously deals were made last year, but, you know, I think that there are kind of special deals that happen here.
Well, they certainly have had there's been quite a legacy of events, and like you said, those random encounters.
Yes.
What's, you have built, Alice and Olivia is one of the biggest sort of organic retail fashion brands to come along in a long time, and you've expanded significantly in the last couple of years. Your retail presence, you have a big e-commerce business.
Yep.
Has the experience of being here with so many CEOs and having some pretty well-known CEOs in your extended family, has that been beneficial to you as you grew this business?
Yeah, I mean, I learn so much from people like my father-in-law, like watching him work, watching what he does in business. Like, it's inspiring. And being here always kind of inspires me. Like, I'll come up with things that we need to do from even a technology perspective sometimes at Alice and Olivia. I'll get ideas hearing from, you know, CEOs what they're doing. It just makes your, you know, I think for me, like, a lot of the panels aren't about retail, but I'll get ideas. It might be things that have to do with video or crypto or anything that just can apply to the retail world. And yeah, I've been really proud of the growth at Alice and Olivia and, you know, my team in the past, but this year was almost to the point of tears, right? Because watching the way my team came together and persevered and pivoted and pushed through a really difficult period was powerful.
Did you have just a massive downturn as lockdown hit in, you know,
yeah,
the spring
no
of 2020?
I mean, I have over 40 retail stores. I sell enough, like 800 other points of sale. So yeah, we have a strong e-commerce business, but you know, we also have clothes that we make for women, where we make clothes for women when they travel, when they go to work, when they're getting married, when they're, you know, going on a date. Like every single you know, end use of our clothing was disrupted.
Right.
And it, you know, so we had to pivot to making a lot more casual clothing up until obviously 2021. But so it was the entire year was just disrupted on all fronts. Plus, you know, we had stores that just couldn't even be open for a big portion of the year.
Mm-hmm. As a lot of people have said, that the pandemic period tested every part of the organization.
Yeah.
What did you learn about the business of Alice and Olivia going through this?
Yeah, I think when you're going through really tough periods like that, you know, what it does is it kind of shines a flashlight on every weakness, right? It doesn't really, your strengths at that point don't matter as much as your weaknesses do. And, you know, as a business leader or founder or creative director, we had to kind of really look at those and figure out how to fix them at a time when it wasn't easy to fix things, right? Like, you know, and our whole company had to be virtual. But what I was most proud of was that through really trying times, we made some really positive changes that needed to happen, I think, in the business overall. You know, we closed our sample room and took all the costs out of, you know, the business that were applicable there, and we moved all of our, you know, development and design overseas. And those were big changes, but had to be made. We had no choice. You know, our fittings had to be virtual, our pattern making had to be overseas. So it forced change, but I think that looking back, I just have so much pride in how each one of my teams handled what they had to do to pivot to make it through 2020. And we made some beautiful clothes during that period somehow too. So,
do you have a sense as you design clothes for the future, do you have a sense that there has been a significant kind of cultural shift in what people are looking for? Are they looking for more casual clothes after 15 months in sweatpants?
No, I mean, I think right now we've just seen this explosion in like women wanting to shop and wear dresses and dress up again. And yes, right? Like, I mean, I'm a casual one today. I was trying to be all Sun Valley in jeans. But no, we've just seen like a huge demand beyond what we expected for clothes to dress up in. I think people are having weddings and having parties and having special events, and there's like a big demand. I think going forward, what will probably change, and again, as a woman who's taken a lot of pride in having a company filled with women who have, you know, had babies and still worked, I think there will be more flexibility in the workplace to accommodate people where they work. Like, are they remote? Are they in an office? If you're a writer, like, do you have to be there every day? If you're a designer, do you know, being a little bit more flexible to accommodate people's needs. And for me, like, I've had designers who've worked remotely for years. I've had a designer who's working down in South America, another one in Paris. And I think that, like, I hope that what this virtual world that was created during 2020 allows us to do is accommodate opportunities for women in a way that they're allowed to balance their lives a little bit more. So,
I mean, definitely one of the learnings coming out of this has been, you know, what really matters
to answer
and
how that, yeah, and to answer how that affects dressing. Like, I think that when people are working from home, they kind of want to do that like blazer and casual pant look, you know, like I noticed that we're selling right now all these like wide leg pants, but they have like kind of elastic, easy waistbands, you know, so it's like people want to be, they're used to being comfortable, but they want to dress up again. I do think it's time to burn the sweatpants, though. For all the ladies listening to this, it's just say goodbye.
Generation ago, it was burning bras. Now it's definitely the sweatpants. Alice and Olivia started with your search for the perfect pair of pants. Mm-hmm. You've told that story many times.
Yes.
What, as you kind of gradually built this brand, what in the early days, what was the important catalyst? What put Alice and Olivia over the top and allowed you to open so many boutiques and have retail relationships?
Well, I think that our brand was always about kind of democratizing fashion a little bit for women, right? Our brand was about not like one whole look. It was about items, and it still is, that allow women to express their own self. And I always think about fashion as each woman's art each day. It's how you express yourself. It's how you show to the world who you are by what, you know, it's your sartorial art. And when I started, you know, I didn't start saying, oh, I'm going to build a global empire and I'm going to build full collections. I literally started because I was like, I want to make really cool pants. And at the time, if you want a little fashion history, you know, you had like the denim world, like the Earls and Sevens of the world. And then you had like designer, and then you had like real street, you know, like kind of more like H&ME kind of stuff, or Zara or whatever. You didn't have contemporary, and Theory really kicked off what is now known as the contemporary world of fashion, which is where you find fashion and you find, you know, designer made clothing, but at a price point that's not like a $10,000 gown. And so I think where we came in at that time unknowingly, you know, was sort of that we were entering that itemized contemporary market. And in the beginning, contemporary was like kind of Theory pants and suits, James Purse t-shirts and jeans. And we came in and started making dresses and beautiful blouses and things that were fancy,
right,
to kind of pair back to all those items that the big guys were making. And from that, we really grew. And, you know, I still think of the sensibility of Alice and Olivia the same way, as making these beautiful items that every woman who tries it on can wear in her own way. You know, so you might wear a dress with a pair of heels and another girl's putting it on with a pair of sneakers. You know, my mom might wear our blazer back to her skinny jeans, and I might wear the blazer back to a ball gown skirt, you know, and we've managed to sort of, I hope, create clothes that allow women to express themselves with color, with print, and, you know, their own, and to really, like, sort of bring out their personality. I mean, that's what I love doing.
I so love your use of bold color. It in and of itself makes a bold statement, for sure. Let's talk about creatively.
Yes.
You took the leap and launched a new kind of social network, professional networking service,
yep,
for people in the creative community, and you launched it in the teeth of the pandemic. What was it about that time that made you feel like it was the right time to unveil creatively?
So I felt that over the last several years, when I was hiring people at Alice and Olivia, it was really difficult to hire creative people. And the only way you really, you know, looked at resumes or found people was on LinkedIn. And I'm like, A, most creative people aren't on LinkedIn. And B, LinkedIn is an amazing tool if you're hiring like a salesperson or an accountant. But when you're hiring a creative person, you need to see their world. I feel weird going and like stalking someone's Instagram, looking at their kids when I'm like trying to interview them, but you need to see their visual world, right? So you get a white piece of resume for someone who's making things in 3D for you, and it just doesn't equate. And you know, you can interview them or whatever, but you know, you'd have to have 3 hours of, you know, having them do projects, having them put together a portfolio. And I just kind of one day said there needs to be this professional network and job platform that is built for the creative world, that is a portfolio-driven tool that allows creatives to share their work in the most powerful way. And I like to describe it as almost the most beautiful free art gallery for the creative, which is basically a way to facilitate creatives showing their work. And it is not a place for creatives to share pictures of their children or what cocktail they're having,
right,
or, you know, their political stance on, you know, A, B, and C. It is truly just a safe place for creatives to share their work, show their work, collaborate on their work, and to find work. So it is a job platform. It is a, you know, it is a professional network. And what's been really exciting is, you know, the response we've had from creatives that are so excited to have this tool, but also from brands who are now using it. We have over 1,000 brands and companies using the platform, not just in fashion, in all industries, to find creative talent and hire creative talent.
We'll take a break here and be back with more from Allison Olivia and Creatively founder Stacey Bendit Eisner.
Tell me, what's the business model behind it?
We charge companies. We don't charge the creative. The platform is totally free for creatives. We charge companies. We have different service levels where companies can use to, they can actually use Creatively to set up projects, so they can hire, they're going to be able to hire creatives directly, but they can also post jobs, just like they would on something like a LinkedIn or another professional network. So that's our model is similar to that, but we do not charge the creative. We only charge brands to use Creatively to hire a, you know, mobile global creative workforce, freelance and full time. That's the other difference. It's like there wasn't really we kind of fill this niche for creatives where we have a job. Most people don't post a job like listing for something freelance. It's just for full time. Whereas on Creatively, companies are encouraged to post both.
We're going to need somebody for 6 months,
yes,
on this specific project.
Or two
project.
Days here in Mexico.
And if you have a specialty
a
on this kind of graphic,
exactly,
so much the better.
And you can search by location. You can search by category. Mm-hmm.
How have you gotten this company on its feet? Have you funded it yourself? Did you go raise money?
So in the beginning, I funded it myself with my partner, whose name is Reagan Silber. And then since then, we've done a little bit of fundraising. My father-in-law is an investor. Sherry Redstone's company is an investor. We have Lion Tree as an investor. So we've got some great minds and advisors behind us. And you know, we just started building it about 2 years ago, and then we launched it a little bit earlier than expected. But last, you know, May, in the midst of the pandemic, all these students were graduating from schools. They didn't have jobs. They didn't have a way to network. And so, upon meeting with some of the schools, specifically through the CFTA in the fashion industry, we just launched it a little bit earlier than we thought, but we're able to allow all these students to put their portfolios places and apply for jobs. Like, you can apply for jobs right through Creatively. And we post hundreds, if not thousands, of job listings a week.
How did you get the word out at the beginning?
So we launched it with, you know, press. I promoted it on social. I had a lot of friends who promoted it. You know, we have a, you know, Instagram account for Creatively, which we used. And, you know, we've just gotten a lot of, you know, of press, because I think it's truly something that just hasn't existed in the world. You know, our job is really to facilitate it jobs for creatives and to make it easier for companies to find and hire creatives. And our next venture, which we're launching this week, is our next step, Creatively Pay. And Creatively Pay is what I think a big game changer in the world of hiring creatives, and a big game changer for creatives, because what we're doing is eliminating what I think is one of the biggest pain points for creatives, which is getting paid. You know,
the long wait between invoice and accounts payable, sending that check.
Creatively Pay will be the fastest way for creatives to get paid for their work. They can get paid the same day for their work. And not only that, but what Creatively Pay will, we're announcing it this week, but in the fall when we launch it, there will be ways for you to very easily invoice, to schedule your jobs. We want to make life easier for creatives so they can be creative. I felt so lucky in my career to have, you know, a sort of infrastructure around me and almost like a platform beneath me to, you know, handle a lot of like logistics and a lot of things on the business side of my company so that I could be free to let my brain be creative. And I want to help other creatives have that. And I think this is a big part of it. I mean, I hear from friends that I work with, you know, they're a photographer, they're a videographer, they're a hair person, a makeup person, and sometimes they're waiting 3 months to get paid. So what we are doing is announcing a partnership with Aurum, and we are the interim financing so that when you use Creatively Pay, you are paid the same day. And Aurum is the liquidity so that companies can still have their 30-day terms or whatever they need, but the creative does not have to wait all of that time to receive a check for the work that they've completed.
And does the company, the companies that partner with Creatively to do this, do they have to pay an extra fee for that service? How
are you going to monetize? No, they have to be verified, but for the first, like, several months or a year, there is no fee. And we will never charge the creatives for this, because that's the other issue. A lot of times creatives are getting chunks taken out of their paycheck from agents and managers, which is okay if they're providing a service, but a lot of times like they're having, you know, money taken out for other things when they're trying to get even paid on time. So we want to make things as positive and productive for the creative as possible. You know, Aurum will verify all of the brands that we're working with. But if a creative says to a company, I want to get paid through Creatively Pay, it's very easy for the company to get set up to pay them through that. Mm-hmm. And it's of no pain to the brand either.
Well, as somebody who's been on the phone with freelancers desperately waiting by the mailbox for that all-important check, I can imagine,
yes,
that there will be some interest in this service. I would imagine, though, that there is some risk for you in this, in the sense that not every invoice is paid in full.
Right.
How are you going to mitigate against the deal that falls through, the job that gets paid a kill fee or a half fee?
So there are going to be some things that are worked out over the next several months until when we launch this in the fall, but Creatively is the facilitator of this. Like, we're the platform and we are the, you know, the kind of invoicing and payment front end, whereas Aurum is the finance, they're like the bank. But Aurum is this amazing, you know, new company that is changing the way that money moves around. So there's also the other fee that the lag time creatives have is sometimes it takes 5 days for the bank to clear your payment too. So Aurum's technology allows for there to be zero time for your money to clear through the bank. And it's providing the interim liquidity between the company and the creative. I mean, it's their responsibility to verify the brands that are working with the creatives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like if a photographer does a job for a birthday party and it's an individual, like, we're not getting in that game. It's about verified brands on Creatively that can use Creatively Pay with creatives.
That would do that,
yes,
kind of business at,
yes,
scale. What's it been like for you launching this kind of very IP-based business versus Alice and Olivia, a very hard goods,
yeah,
you know, making shirts and making skirts,
yep,
kind,
yeah,
of business?
I know, it's funny, exactly. Like, my main job is so tangible, right? Like, it's touch, it's feel, it's, you know, what, like, and this is all kind of a little bit more, you know, in the ethos, right? So it's been really exciting for me to work on a startup again, right? But I think, like, I'm a sort of natural entrepreneur where even if you look at Alice and Olivia over the years, we've done so many entrepreneurial things. Even though as a company we're almost 20 years old, like, every year we're doing something new. You know, we launched this, we did this collaboration. So there's a lot of kind of, like, startup energy in Alice and Olivia still, but the difference is that I think with Creatively, you know, the whole company's virtual. I'm working with all these cool tech guys, you know, and it's so different than my life at Alice and Olivia that's filled with women and fabric and color and things with touch and fittings. And it could not be more opposite, but it's still really creative.
that last startup of yours, Alice and Olivia, in 2015, you told a fashion magazine that it had grown to be a $200 million business. You have expanded significantly since then. Can you give us a ballpark of what the business is today?
We don't really give numbers out, and we definitely like cut back a lot in 2020. But for this year, probably around like $250 million. And you know, I think the resizing that sort of happened in 2020 was this, I always try to look at things as like the glass is half full, and it allowed us to like kind of just tighten things up in a way and change things without judgment, right? Like every year it was like you had to grow, you had to be up, you know, 10% or this. And in 2020, it was just kind of like, no, we've got to fix things and we've got to make things more efficient. And you know, we've taken that time too to be able to like make the company more eco, like our fabrics, our waste, our, you know, just everything became less about this, you know, over, I think the retail world for many years was about like grow. And you were kind of living in that growth versus living in profit. And I think that last year what we did was slim things down to actually become more profitable, which was sort of nice. So, you know, we're not, you know, we're probably, what, like 20% bigger than we were, but we are way more efficient, so.
And are you and your partner, Andrew Rosen, are you still the principal owners of the business?
We are, and he's amazing. I mean, I feel like I'm so lucky. I mean, I my creatively team I love, I picked good work partners. So Andrew's been my partner for almost 20 years.
That's a good skill of a CEO.
Right? He's, through the pandemic, I can't tell you what, I could like actually like cry thinking about it because there were some really tough times, but he was the most incredible support as a like a friend, as like a big brother and as a partner, and he really helped us get through. I mean, it was complicated getting through all the financial, you know, sort of runaround of, you know, loans and you know, all everything. It was crazy, the PPE loans. He's an amazing, not just retailer and entrepreneur, but he's an incredible friend. So I feel really lucky to have that. And my creative lead team too, like my CEO, Greg Gitrich, amazing guy. My chief product officer, amazing. So I'm surrounded by some good business partners, business husbands, business wives.
Stacey, you have no shortage of drive and ambition.
Thank you.
It's wonderful. What do you think, one thing that I know is often talked about up here at Allen Company is that for all the progress, there's still relatively few of you, relatively few CEOs of really big, successful, influential brands.
And
I know it's a tough question, but do you have any thoughts about what it will take to bring more women into the C-suite?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on it, so we might have to do another interview. But I think, listen, balancing work and children is not easy. And, you know, it is not simple and it is not easy. But companies need to create environments that allow for, you know, women to have a little bit of flexibility to succeed. And they also need, and I think women need to root for other women. You know, I think so often as a culture, when, you know, a woman is in the press is waiting to take her down. And that is what needs to change. You know, we need to like be proud of women for being ambitious. We need to be proud of women for being successful. And we need to, you know, like we need to allow for it a little bit more. And I think that when you look around this conference, yeah, it's still mostly men. And that does need to change, but we need to start that from the early years. You know, we need to encourage women to stay in the workforce through the first years of having kids. Because once you leave the workforce during that time, it is really hard to get back in it like an upper level. And I see it all the time because, you know, you have a baby, you're like, I'm gonna take a year or two off, then you have another baby, and then all of a sudden you're like, the world's moved really quickly during those years of babies. And the best advice I can give is, you know, and I can't even say that I did a great job of this because I was kind of always like, I'm gonna do all of it. And, you know, women and men need to be collaborative in their parenting and caregiving efforts. Like there needs to be a standard that changes where it's not always the mom that has to run to school or always the mom that has to take the kid to the doctor or the mom that has to do this. It has to be collaborative parenting. And I think that's actually a really big part of women being able to make it to the upper levels, because women tend to take on all of the home duties and work, and then, you know, you're fried, you're tired, you're exhausted, and at some point you maybe give up, or, you know, want to work part-time, or, you know, lose the ambition to get up here. And I think that, you know, that starts with kind of like societal training, that parenting is parenting between man and man and woman, but it is two people that are responsible for that work. And luckily I have a husband who like is a really present dad, right? But that's one thing. And then the other thing is that companies need to create environments that allow women to succeed. You know, like, I don't expect women to be at dinners at 8 o'clock every night, because I know they need to go home and they want to be with their kids for bedtime. You know, we're flexible, especially, like, I have a lot of women who, like, you know, as they became more senior executives in my company, like, we have a tremendous amount of flexibility to allow them to kind of, you know, be a little more virtual. And I hope that this year encourages companies to see that and allow for that too. Sorry I'm rambling, but I could go on about this for a very long time.
I can tell, and I was just thinking that if ever there has been a there's been a period for learning about what, you know, what requires a person to physically be in an office versus, you know,
yeah,
what you can do in a situation that gives you more flexibility when you have rugrats running around.
And yeah, it's, I mean, listen, and I always preface these conversations with, I know that I was privileged and lucky to have a lot of help when my kids were little. I will say that the hardest years are when your kids are like 1, 2, and 3. Once they're in school a full day, you can create this balance where, you know, you sort of drop them off at school, you go to work, they maybe have an activity, everyone's home, right? And, you know, I really have always tried to reiterate the fact that Alice and Olivia, that if you were at your desk past like 6 or 7 at night, like, you're not managing your time well. Because we don't, you know, as a company, we really try to, we want women to have a balanced life. That is so important to me as a woman, and it's important to me to nurture and really facilitate for the women who work for me. But the hardest years are when your kids are little. Although I will say that as your kids get bigger, you have bigger problems. But
the Band-Aid won't fix everything,
yeah,
after a while.
Yeah, that Neosporin doesn't like fix every boo-boo. But you know, it's but companies have to, you know, just as they're making efforts in terms of diversity and inclusion, they also have to be continuously making efforts to, you know, make sure that they have more women involved, and not just like a, oh, I put a woman on my board. Like, you need women involved in your company in, you know, those C-level positions. Even in the fashion industry today, when they did a report a couple years ago, it was like there was only like, I can't remember the exact percentage, but the percentage of women in C-suites in fashion was like only 20% or 30%.
When we look around, we see so many great examples like yourself of women thriving, and yet the numbers are just stubbornly low.
It's going to take time, because you can't just pop women into the C-suite, right? You have to bring them up. And so that, you know, women need to be mentored, women need to be encouraged, women need to be inspired to stay in the workforce. And it's going to take, you know, 5 or 10 years to start to see that all really change. I do think the effort's being made, and I do think we will start to see it, but you can't just all of a sudden have, like, all women in the C-suite, because you don't have them down, you know, at the mid-level.
You've got to absolutely have the foundation,
yes,
to succeed.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, Stacey, my goodness, thank you so much for taking time out from this very heady event to share your thoughts with us, and congratulations on the success of Alice and Olivia, and look forward to seeing Creatively grow in the coming years.
Yes, and everyone needs to check out Creatively Pay.
Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.